Hello. How's it going, Billy?
Not too bad. Welcome to the second episode of The Department Live.
Second episode of The Department Live. Here we are. And I have a... this is great. So this is like 15 seconds in and I have a connection issue. So why don't you cue the intro music and I'm going to go solve my connection issue.
We want to acknowledge that Carleton University and the other locations where we make this podcast are on traditional, unceded Algonquin territory.
Welcome, welcome, welcome back, Phil Primo.
Well, thank you, Billy.
For those billions of potential listeners who are potentially listening at the moment, we've spent the last hour trying to figure out technological difficulties, Phil, haven't we?
Yes. Audio routing through interfaces, through H4N Pros, through really weird cell phone adapter things. You know what?
Yeah.
We're here.
Well, Phil, now that I'm on the controlling end of the music for once, how is the sound of the music on your end?
I like it. I like it.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's not too loud. It's in the background. It's on a loop.
Perfect.
You know, it's there. It's our brand. It's our theme music.
It is. Well... On the topics of brands and theme music, well, not on the topic at all, actually. The theme of today's show is Reading Break Creative Edition. How did you come up with the Creative Edition idea, Phil?
Well, you know, it struck me as something that in our current teaching and learning virtual environments, that it would be kind of interesting to shed light and think about the different ways that we go about doing research and education, not only through text and lectures, but maybe through art.
Absolutely. And one of the things I've become aware of in the last few years, working with you, interviewing loads of people around the department and Carleton University, is just the astonishing amount of projects that people are involved in our department and all over the university, that deal with and use sort of unconventional or non-traditional forms of social science research and methodologies. It's a pretty exciting place to be, Carleton, at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You know, I was drawn to Carleton for its research, but I stayed for its pedagogy, if that makes any sense. And the sort of creative stuff that not only our department but across faculties do is really interesting. It's not so out there. You know, we're not talking about very abstract sort of art exhibits or things like that, but it's thinking about research and thinking about serious topics in a different way.
We want to acknowledge that Carleton University and the other
Sorry, Phil, that's my technical...
No, you can stop that music now.
Thanks. Sorry, to get back to what you were saying that the types of research out there are, they're not completely out there, but they're useful in other ways. Is that what you were saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
basically, I was reading on the news this morning that Kim Kardashian had her partner gave her a hologram of her father for her birthday. Yeah. So it wouldn't be that kind of stuff, would it? Kind of using holograms.
Okay. There's a lot in what you just said right there. Okay. So hologram technology. I'm a Trekkie, right?
I think
we've talked about this before. So like, you know, the holodeck, anything having to do with that sort of thing interests me. So I also saw that late last night.
Right.
Maybe I have some sort of advanced warning signal when Kim Kardashian does something. Right. But so like true holograms don't exist yet, right? Okay. They basically use like an old 19th century technology of mirrors, and this company has some sort of like foam like material that they use, and they refract lights and stuff off of it. Right. So it's not the holograms from the Enterprise, but the holograms from the Enterprise are really interesting.
And, oh, yeah?
yeah. And like, you know, just think of the holodeck, right? The holodeck was meant as like a training facility, something to learn skills and practice skills, and also a way to entertain, right?
Right.
So like the holodeck as like the principle is really interesting from an academic perspective as well.
Huh. So you mean sort of thinking of the world and the social world as a to think of social science as a potential holodeck, right? A series of experiments you can do to transport you to different worlds. Would that be a kind of a one way of thinking of it?
Yeah, I think that's a great kind of parallel. The ability to transport you to different worlds, but also the ability to test things out in like a safe environment. Like, okay, I know that like the holodeck on the Enterprise would always malfunction. It was like the storyline from multiple TNG episodes, right? Like Picard must have just been like, why don't we just shut this thing down, right? Like just shut down. But like safety control, like operating at peak efficiency, right? Like safety controls engaged. The holodeck is a safe place to test things out, right? To experiment and try things and not get hurt. So if you think about the holodeck as like a breeding ground for creativity, then, you know, the social sciences can actually play that role of like refractory sort of technology, right? Where we can try something, refract, or, you know, hold the mirror up to society, give it a try in a space that's safe, within parameters. We have the safety controls engaged, and then and then participants can learn something, can practice something, can gain some skills, or also like just pure entertainment as well, right? Like the social sciences can play a role in diversity, like
absolutely. I suppose it does tie in very closely to the topic of today's show, which is, you know, this kind of using creativity and non-traditional social scientific methods. I mean, when you think about what sociology and anthropology is or are, what they are as subjects and as disciplines, the idea of a holodeck as some sort of kind of thought experiment that you can work through in real life is kind of appealing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Do you, I have some things in mind, but have you seen some cultural products that sort of present it like this? Or are you thinking of some?
I'm not thinking of cultural products. I'm thinking of what I was thinking specifically of was in our interview with Tom Kempel about The Watchmen a few months ago. He talked a lot about these kind of thought experiments that he uses in classrooms, right? Through the use of diagrams and images as ways of getting students into a particular theoretical world, if you like, and allowing them to kind of wander around and explore that world, via this interface that he's created in the form of a diagram. So the idea of a holodeck for me is appealing because it does speak to some of the ways that I know other people in our department, myself included, and yourself as well, think about social science, right? As one way of thinking about it is to think about it as a kind of a thought experiment that's interfaceable, so to speak, with people's experience, right?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, that says something also about the sort of trajectory of social science, where we're at. You know, we're not in an age where we're thinking of structuralist forces that need to be sort of observed and calculated. We do live in an age where imagination plays a very important role. And if I was to look through the syllabi of introductory courses, I think the majority of them would assign something related to the sociological imagination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that sort of ability to transport yourself to the biographies and histories of others and think about those links becomes really important for our current practice of social science.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was wondering, have you ever come across any interesting readings or sort of articles that kind of speak to that issue, Phil?
Well, a little bit. I mean, I'm going to bring us back in history just a little bit on this one, but we used to have a prime minister who said that, you know, we should not commit sociology, so to speak, or now is not the time to commit sociology.
Right.
Yeah. And that
he was
really
the popular guy, wasn't he?
Well, yeah, it depends on your definition of popular, I guess.
Tongue in cheek.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So that guy, right?
Yeah.
But you know, that did lead to a whole bunch of social scientists and sociologists in particular commenting and coming out and voicing their opinion about what sociology is and speaking through a little bit about their practice of sociology. So at that time, science and technology studies was also very much in the sort of doing. How do we do social science? How do we do science and technology? What is the sort of practice of doing research? So myself and two colleagues actually were able to contribute to that discussion a little bit by thinking through the ideas and the ways in which we go about doing things. So we talked about methodology. We talked about, you know, how we handle materials in our everyday sort of research and our, but also more kind of abstractly, what it means to be doing sociology and what do sociologists do, right? Like, and that sort of reflection actually led me to one of my key lines, my PhD dissertation. So reflecting on that horrible person and what horrible thing that person said actually fueled my PhD dissertation in a roundabout way. So, you know, in a sandbox of ideas that, you know, it's kind of a very imaginative use of an opportunity, I felt.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I mean,
what about you? I'm sure you've come across some literature about this as well.
I have, yeah. I definitely one of the best books I've read as a grad student was a book by Howard Becker, Telling About Society. And I read it, I think maybe it was fairly early on in my PhD. It was Tom Kempel who actually gave it to me, another great book he lent
me. There's the link, yeah.
I know, he was, and still is. And basically, the book Howard Becker, he basically talks about representations and ways through which social scientists represent knowledge to the world. And he goes through a series of really interesting case studies and real life examples of ways through which people working with texts use various methods that are particularly suited to their readers or their audience as ways of communicating that knowledge in a more effective way. So he uses a lot of case studies of, say, research groups putting on a play to communicate the results of their findings in theatrical form to members of the public or to members of the community that they were doing research in, you know. I found that a particularly interesting one. And I also, it's probably the reason why I was drawn to Warren Clark's third year course, The Theatre of the Oppressed as well, because it tied in with that. So I can, that's one example on my end, Phil, that I can think of that really sort of struck a chord with me, you know.
Yeah. Happened a while ago, but a colleague in our department of politics, William Walters, was one part of a art exhibit called Security and Its Publics. The art exhibit followed sort of a traditional academic conference, right? People came, they presented papers and this sort of thing. But then the art exhibit also included local artists and people who wanted to showcase visually the sort of content, the sort of theme of that conference, Security and Its Publics. And especially when you're dealing with issues of immigration, transnational movement of people and things, topics like surveillance, when you're talking about stuff like drones and walls, these physical things, they lend themselves really well to a museum style art exhibit, right? So you can show a picture of a drone flying. You can show a video of people trying to climb a wall, for example. And that says something about the world around us in this sort of interactive engaging way, mm-hmm. in a different, sort of like what Becker's saying, in a different style than text on a page.
Yeah, it's one of the things he really does very well, Howard Becker, is to respect the kind of traditional kind of research methods, while at the same time sort of pushing the boundaries, right, in terms of from a practical point of view and a theoretical point of view, pushing the boundaries as to what exactly is possible in a social mm-hmm. scientific point of view. It's one of the reasons I particularly like his works on that stuff, you know.
Yeah, I've always been drawn to Becker, and was Becker part of the Chicago School of Sociology? Do you know?
Well, he did a lot of stuff with Goffman, right? In terms of one of his case studies is on the work of Irvin Goffman in Telling About Society. I don't know specifically okay. he was part of the Chicago School, Phil. I think he was more of a West Coast kind of person, but okay, I know that he had a lot of contacts with Goffman for sure. You know.
Right. Yeah. And I've been more and more interested in sort of biographies of academics, biographies of researchers. And there's some lines between Foucault and Becker and Goffman as well, a little bit, that I'm trying to sort of tease out and explore. Right. But Foucault had an appreciation for this sort of work that Becker was doing. And that to me is kind of interesting, coming from, you know, two theoretical different places, right? You know, Foucault postmodern sort of post-structuralist sort of thinking, and Becker being a little bit more, I would call it like American style sociology.
Mm-hmm.
Finding those commonalities are kind of interesting to me. Yeah.
It just when you were saying that, a documentary popped into my head that I saw a while back, and it was from the West Coast, so that's why I'm connecting it with Becker. The name of the movie, a documentary, was called A Headbanger's Journey. It was a student, and I think it was an anthropology or a sociology student from the University of Victoria, who turned either their master's or their PhD thesis into a 10-hour documentary. Oh, sorry, a 1.5-hour, 2-hour documentary about heavy metal fans and heavy metal as a type of subculture, right? I'm kind of thinking about the different ways through which, and different examples we could think of, where people working in an academic context have, you know, used something like documentary form, movies, as ways to communicate ideas and, you know, perspectives about the sociological or the social world as well. Can you think of any, I mean, it's kind of off the top of your head, but can you think of any sort of popular culture examples along those lines, Phil?
Well, two that kind of came immediately to mind when you were thinking that was we interviewed Sempe a little while ago, and a graduate student at Carleton, who mm-hmm. turned her environmental sociology sort of research into a short film. I believe that she filmed just using her iPhone at a protest, I believe. So it was this cross between sort of engaged research, environmental sociology, and this kind of documentary making. And, you know, it's a short video. It won tons of prizes and, you know, it's great mm-hmm. and all this kind of stuff. But for me, it shows more the realm of possibility, right? Like, you can take a research question and an idea, go out in the world and film, edit, and then present it back to us in a sort of different way than you would have, say, on a blog post,
mm-hmm.
Which Sempe did as well. So we have the blog posts and the sort of longer text to accompany the sort of stuff, right? Like, she's like super active and, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so that's one. And then the other one, and I think it comes from a little bit more of the genre of fiction, but it's the Netflix series called Black Mirror.
Ah.
And do you know this Black Mirror?
Charlie Brooker. Yes, I do.
Yeah, yeah. I believe it's a British production, or UK anyway.
Yeah, it's Charlie Brooker. He does a bunch of stuff on media and TV, on British TV as well, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, you know, for listeners who are unacquainted with Black Mirror, it was probably a viral thing a few years ago. Mm. But basically it follows different stories for each episode in this very speculative science fiction setting. Some of them are most of them are in the future, but we don't necessarily know when. It involves lots of technology. It involves, you know, our fear of, for example, artificial intelligence and AI. But profoundly, each sort of storyline has a sort of social and relational base to it. It's about how we treat each other in a world that looks and feels quite different than the one that we're currently in.
And do you think that Charlie Brooker, in his making of this show, is doing social science? Do you think it could be said within reason that he's doing something social scientific in the show, Phil?
Yeah, I would have to say absolutely.
Yeah.
I think all television, most media is this sort of like refraction of the world, right? And I think, you know, they called it Black Mirror for a very literal purpose. It is holding up a mirror to the world around us, right? It's a critique, it's a commentary, but it's also done in a very speculative way, right? Because we don't know exactly how things are going to be. We can only speculate about it. But speculative science fiction, has been around for a while, for a number of years, informing social science theory as well. And that claim, maybe I'm pushing a little bit, but what do you think about that claim, that social science fiction or speculative science fiction has informed social theory?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I suppose when you call it speculative, it kind of like... If you call it kind of social science fiction, I think in my mind it kind of makes more sense to my own sort of frame of references, right? And I think that the sort of theorists, social scientists using literary methods, using fictional vignettes and fictional stories as a way to sort of present certain truths about the social world. I think that's one of the great things about sociology as a discipline, because it does bridge that sort of disciplinary gap between the social sciences and literature, you know, and I think anthropology does the same. They're two very literary and social scientific disciplines. Absolutely. It's one of the more interesting aspects of theoretical work in relation to sociology, Phil, you know?
Yeah, and like, you know, the word speculative in there, I agree with you that it can throw the genre into this sort of loop where it's like, okay, we don't actually know what we're doing, right? It's hard to pin down something because of this speculative nature of it. But if we think about research and the research process, when you start, you don't exactly know where it's going to go. I think, a while ago we spoke with Alexis Shotwell, and Alexis spoke to us a little bit about the link between sort of engaged positions, but engaged in the way that really you're trying to build community, or you're trying to build connections with research participants or your sort of audience, right? And it's this sort of idea that we can be open to a number of possibilities. So when we sit down to interview someone, or when we turn to the archives to start looking at material, that we're allowing and giving ourselves a space to be surprised and to find sort of compassion in those moments. And I think from that perspective, then the word speculative means something in a social scientific sort of way.
Yeah, it when you describe it like that, it definitely puts a completely different kind of meaning onto it, right? So it makes perfect sense in that context, for sure. And I suppose, like, you know, when you talk about the research process, there is a degree of, you know, like, I suppose uncertainty is the kind of defining aspect of it, right? In terms of thinking about possibilities and possible explanations for things. And I mean, even in terms of, say coursework, right? Students doing sort of, you know, assignments and stuff like that. Have you come across, have you come across any interesting examples of creative types of assignments that students do in our department, Phil?
Well, you know, I think one is coming from the first year seminars. And I'm a little biased here because, you know, I play a role in, as yourself, in teaching the first year seminars, but the first year seminars are an opportunity, to do some of this, creative sort of work, right? Whether that be podcasts or, zines or graphic novels or comics. But also something like, you know, organizing a protest, thinking through, you know, what, a table promoting a social cause looks like, you know, going out into the world and, you know, maybe doing a book drive for folks who are incarcerated, right? It may cross the line between, like, you know, community work versus research, but I argue that the two really can't really be separated sometimes. So when we're doing that sort of outreach work and when we're engaging in the community, we're thinking about ourselves and our role in that community. And that's very much a pedagogical and learning sort of moment, right? Those are the sort of things that come to mind immediately coming out of our department right now.
Yeah, I'm thinking as well of Deborah Connor's classes. You know, I know she does a lot of audio, video, community projects, a whole range of different types of assignments that students find really engaging, right? And find really exciting as well, and kind of deal with the question that you were mentioning, right? How to present knowledge, social scientific knowledge about the world in ways that are maybe different, more engaging for a different audience, and so on and so forth. So if I ask myself that question, it's Deb Connor's classes in community engaged sociology and her methods class that really pop out in my mind, you know?
And as you were saying that, I thought a little bit more about the sort of realm of social media. And I came across some stuff from another podcast that is out of Carleton, the Minding the Brain podcast. Okay. And I believe one half of that podcast is Kim
Hellmans.
Is it Kim? Yeah, Kim Hellmans.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she created a video, I believe, as part of a class project or involve students somehow around mental health issues. And it was, you know, this sort of media product that spoke to her own research in the field of neuroscience and mental health, but also her students' work around those topics. So, you know, finding avenues to use social media as a platform to disseminate some of those works as well, right? And I'm sure there's many more examples that we could find as well.
Yeah, and hopefully over the course of the next few shows, we'll be able to, deal with and provide those examples, some more precise examples over the course of the next few weeks as well, you know?
Yeah. So if you have an example of something creative that you are doing, working on, or maybe it's something creative that your students are doing or working on, let us know.
Yes.
You know, remind people how to get into contact with us to let us know. We are on Twitter at Department Pod. You can email us at info@departmentpodcast.ca. And we have a website with the complete catalog of all of our past episodes, including this live one that will be posted to the feed, and that's www.departmentpodcast.ca. that was probably a good time to say this. I want to thank the Department of Sociology and Anthropology for sponsoring this podcast. We really appreciate all the help that goes on behind the scenes as well around our own social media and publicizing this podcast.
Yes, absolutely. Very grateful for all the support, both financial and institutional, from everyone. And apologies, Phil, for leaving it halfway through your talk to add in the music. I'm sorry about that.
Well, you know, music cues happen when they happen, Billy. You just got to roll with it.
I'm still learning, you know? I'm still learning how to do this whole media podcast-y thing, right?
I know. I'm still learning, too. Well, but I think that's it for today. So I want to say thank you. Oh, there it is.
Oh, I just wanted to get into sound effects before the end, right? sorry. Sorry, Phil. I'll let you go. Do you want to have the last word on this?
You know, how can I follow up a clap?
Thanks, everybody. Thank you to all of you for listening to today's show. It's been nice spending time with you again and talking with Phil about the many interesting, exciting things that are happening in our department, as well as around Carleton and beyond. We really look forward to meeting you and talking with you on our next live show. So without further ado, I will say have a good week, everyone.
Have a good week. And hey, thanks for listening.